This is News in No Time. Ed Gordon on today's roundtable: repairing New Orleans' broken levees on the cheap, and elite schools try to bridge the gap between rich and poor students. Joining us today to discuss these topics and more from our Washington, D.C. Bureau, Mary Frances Berry, Professor of History at the University of Pennsylvania. From Spotland Productions in Nashville, Tennessee, Jeff Obafemi Carr. He's a radio host of the show Freestyle. And joining us from Chicago, Roland Martin, executive editor of the Chicago Defender. I thank you all for joining us. And Roland, I hear that you feel about as good as I do today. We'll try to play hurt and go through this. One of the stories we want to take a look at that's going to, down the road, really have a lot of reverberation is that we saw in South Dakota, Governor Mike Rounds signed legislation banning almost all abortions in that state. Many people see this as a direct challenge to Roe v. Wade, the 1973 decision that legalized abortion. And Mary Frances Berry, some are suggesting that we are going to see, obviously, opposition to this, and this finally make its way to the Supreme Court. Do you see this as the beginning of the road?
Well, what I see is that in South Dakota and other states, they believe that now that Alito and Roberts are on the Supreme Court, that they can get a slam-dunk decision getting rid of Roe v. Wade. Those are the signals that they've been getting, and that's what they think. And so they decided to up the ante and pass a bill and be confrontational about it. I think eventually the court will review the decision, and the court will have to reevaluate Roe v. Wade, and that there will be a lot of angst about it. I don't know where the court will come out, whether the hopes of the people who want to get rid of abortion altogether will be realized or not, but I think eventually the court will consider it, and they may come up with some new guidelines which will say something like, abortions in the first trimester are between a woman and her physician, but then after that, given what we know technologically about sustaining life now for fetuses that young, that after the first trimester there are limitations. But I do not believe that they will simply throw out any right for anyone for any reason, whether rape, incest, or medical reasons, to have an abortion. But we'll just have to see.
Jeff Obafemi Carr, there are a lot of people who are seen as Supreme Court watchers, and they try to guess where the court's decisions will come based on, obviously, decisions prior. We have seen this year, including an equal rights case in the workplace, a decision that most people probably found surprising based on the, quote, political makeup of the court. Has that given you any belief that some of what we've heard about the court being too far right may not, in fact, be true?
Yeah, I don't know if it's true or not. I think it's a little bit too early to tell. And especially when we talk about this whole abortion ban notion and trying to reverse a woman's right to do what she wants to with her own body. I think you're going to start seeing cases like this pop up in states where there's a more conservative flair. They want to test the waters. And South Dakota, in essence, is attempting to play a bit of a chicken game with the Supreme Court here and see what happens. I don't think personally it's going to reach up that high. I don't think it's going to get to the courts. I don't think it's going to make its way to that high court. There are too many opportunities between there and now to affirm that woman's right to do what she wants to with her own body. I don't think the court
chances,
is going to be...
There's too many chances to appeal also, Jeff, though.
Well, yeah, you're right, but I really don't think... I think in the end, I think that this might happen. This might have a reverse effect that these states are thinking. I think that the Supreme Court is not going to be bullied into making a decision that they've already held up for so long.
Here's the interesting point, Roland
Martin,
never know. And Mary touched on it earlier, the idea that people like Governor Mike Rounds of South Dakota are really anticipating the idea of laying the foundation, laying the freeway to drive this point through.
Well, absolutely. I mean, what they want to do is utilize the states and set up a federal rights versus states' rights argument as it relates to abortion. And so that's one of the things they want to do in this case. Also, by having such a strict bill, then you put the Supreme Court in a position to establish parameters. And so if they're able to establish parameters in terms of limiting abortions, then they can go back and create additional laws based upon those parameters. And so absolutely, by pushing the envelope as far as possible, you want to see that, hey, we may not get complete expulsion of abortion, but we could have some severe limits.
But the important thing to remember, Ed, is that they wouldn't even be pushing the envelope but for the fact that they see the political winds blowing in their direction, and the court's going in their direction.
All right, let's turn our attention to something we just heard Farai talk with Walter Isaacson, one of the main forces behind the resurrection of New Orleans, and that's the levees. We've heard so much about the levees. There is concern now from an independent team of experts monitoring the reconstruction project of these levees that large sections of the rebuilt levees will be substantially weaker, in their words, than before the hurricane hit. We heard Walter Isaacson suggest that we're not going to see Category 5 levees built. What he called these heavy-duty Category 3 levees are being put up. Is this, again, yet a mistake, Roland Martin, by government being far too short-sighted with what may come down the road?
Well, not necessarily, because the problem that I see is you have a very short window. And so hurricane season begins June 1, and so the problem they're facing is, you know, how do you shore it up as quickly as possible, anticipating a hurricane? And so could you have the ability to shore the levees up the way we want to based upon the shortened time? And so, I mean, whether you like it or not, when you're dealing with construction, there's a certain period of time that you have to use there. And so to expect, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 months to be it when you really need 2 to 3 years, this is what you can expect.
But, Jeff, if in fact these experts are correct, their suggestion is that to meet these deadlines, as Roland said, that they're taking shortcuts that will clearly compromise the construction of these levees.
No, they are definitely taking shortcuts. But I would agree with Roland in the old adage, in life you get what you inspect and not what you expect. So what you expect that you would have enough time to build this thing, but when you look in front of you, you have what you have. And I think Corps spokesman Jim Taylor said it. He said the people of New Orleans need to get back to at least the level of hurricane protection we had before Katrina. We are authorized to do it quickly. It's up to Congress to decide to take it to a higher level. And so they're doing what they can. But the flip side is that something does have to be done in the interim. And I'm terrified at the prospect of the levee issue getting trapped into the standard American way of doing things, the Twilight Zonian state of inactivity that we call the paralysis of analysis.
Well, Mary Frances Berry, we also have to look at this economically. When you talk about $1.6 billion in terms of funds being put forth for this reconstruction project, one has to hope and pray that we will not see the same kind of hurricane season that we saw last year that may, in fact, knock many of these new levees down.
And we had, you know, hurricanes elsewhere, too, in Florida, and we had damage, all of it expensive. But, you know, all of that optimism that Isaacson was expressing, which is what he's supposed to do as vice chair of that commission, won't come to anything if the levees fail and we have a big hurricane again. But here's my take on it. The administration says that the levees are going to be fine. They put out a new story that came out today, and that clay is being brought in to use instead of the dirt that's there. That's weakening it. Although some of the experts say they were standing there and saw people putting the dirt that wasn't clay. So we don't know the answer to that. But what I think is that the people in New Orleans should go ahead and build and do what they have to do, hoping that the levees will not break. But if a hurricane warning comes, everybody should be prepared to leave so that they can test it out and see if it occurs. You should be prepared. People should be prepared to just leave for a little bit to see what happens if they get the warning. We won't know the answer as to whether the levees are fixed unless something happens again and then we find out that they're not.
Jeff, it really is a strange catch-22 to be put in because in one sense you almost want people to stay away until hurricane season is over as to not go through the evacuation once again. That was obviously problematic. Yet you want to rebuild the city. You want people to come home and live their lives.
Yeah, it's a strange catch-22. I mean, if you develop a new fire suit, I don't want to be the first one to test it. That's just logic. So these levees, there are definitely issues here. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers are saying that it's going to be fine, which they're not going to tell people, give people a false sense of security by saying we're not sure. They're going to be sure of that. The outside scientists are saying, well, you can't use weakened soil without armoring with the clay or the rock under the levees to make sure that it's going to be strong. So I think the people of New Orleans are caught in the middle, and I think the best we can hope for is that the levees get up and that we don't have as bad of a season as we had last time.
Mary Frances Berry, I have to start this story with you. Business Week suggested that Amherst College is, quote, an incubator for the elite. And I think it's fair to say that we can say that of many of the elite colleges across this country. What we're seeing from Amherst President Anthony Marks is what he is suggesting as a new affirmative action initiative based on class. And that is that they are proposing to put 25% of the slots to this university and give it to students poor enough to receive Pell grants. What we are also hearing today, MIT is suggesting that they will match grant money for lower income students. Colleges are starting to see that there is no real diversity on campuses, particularly of the elite universities. Lest we think this is really, really big, we should note that Pell grant awards range from $400 to $4,000. MIT's annual income, or I should say tuition, is $43,000.
Yeah, and all of the Ivies are in that same range. I must point out that Charles Hamilton Houston, the great architect of Brown Against the Board, who taught Thurgood Marshall, was an Amherst graduate. I just thought I'd point that out. But anyway, I think Amherst is doing the right thing. I think it's very exciting that they should do this. I'm all in favor of affirmative action based on class, and always have been, as well as affirmative action based on race and sex and so on and national origin. And so I think it's a great idea. It's also true that standardized test scores correlate with income, so that if you just use standardized test scores to admit people, you never would admit these poor people. That's one of the issues they're facing up there, like who do we admit and what will the faculty say about are these students of good quality. But I think it's a wonderful idea, and that elite institutions are in the best position to raise money to fund this. That's why they're elite institutions, and they have these graduates. And I think that they can have all these multiple purposes of trying to open up their campuses, and it's high time that they did it.
Roland Martin, one of the things that the faculty is saying, and we've heard this echo for years, is that even though these students are, quote, smart, they come from, in many people's minds, inferior high schools, and then when they are juxtaposed to other students, they just don't compete and therefore bring down the averages at these universities.
Well, I think that is the elite argument that is used in order to keep them out. I mean, I've heard that nonsense, whether you're talking about state public institutions, whether you're talking about private. I mean, the bottom line is, how do you open up opportunities? And this is one way to do so. And so at least Amherst and others are not trying, simply throwing their hands up and saying, oh, well, we just can't bring them in. You have to create different, unique, and innovative ways to get low-income students into the schools. And I think the universities that have been proactive, that have been vigilant, they have done a better job than those who've simply just thrown their hands up and said, there's nothing we can do, so we're just going to ignore the whole issue.
Jeff, perhaps a Freudian slip on my part. I understand I said Pell grant instead of Pell grant.
Pretty good one.
Let me ask this. The idea that when we hear of grants being given to these students, we should note that that sounds good on paper, but the monies still fall substantially short.
Oh, they do. And you have a case where one of the girls who's now an ambassador for Amherst in particular talked about how she was on a grant there and making great grades, out of Harlem. And she was still had to work in the cafeteria in an apron and still felt as if she was a part of the staff and she was looked down upon. I think we need to reexamine the entire notion of what education is for, period, because we've gotten way off base in America. I could start a fill-in-the-blank statement and everybody listening would get it right. You go to college to get a what? Education. Go to education to get what? A job. Get a job to make what? More money. So the end result of so-called elite education, even in itself, is not to better society. It's not to transform the nature of the human condition. It's not even to discover what one's calling is so they can understand their unique place in this world. It's to make the cheese, the bling, the Benjamins. And I think we really need to have an overhaul. But I think the Amherst College plan is noble.
Mary, real quick for me, with about a minute left, do you believe that this is going to be a trend that we see picked up across campuses?
Well, all of the elite institutions are doing it or having plans to do so and have been for the last 2 or 3 years. And usually where the elite lead, the non-elite stumble along and try to follow or at least pretend that they are. So I think that it will be a trend. I'm not sure that much is going to change in terms of how the poor are treated on campus. That is, they may still have to work in the cafeteria and not, you know, and they may won't have the same things that other students have. But I think the trend of trying to open up opportunity, there may even be some federal program eventually to try to help state schools to do the same thing. But where the elite lead, the others usually follow.
Roland, real quick for me, any thought that we would ever really see a slot set aside for, quote, free education in the real sense of free?
I doubt it, because higher education has become big business.
Roland, can I interrupt you to just say, I must say this, Ed. Higher education was free. It was free at City University in New York. It was free in the whole University of California system. And many of the professionals we see who are immigrants who came in and who are educated, who are European of descent, got a free education. And now we have a new generation of colored people, Latinos in California and elsewhere, and immigrants in New York City who aren't getting a free education. I just thought I'd point that out.
All right. Well, Roland, you'll have to get on Mary. She stole your time. But Jeff Obafemi Carr, Mary Frances.
The way I'm feeling, go ahead, Mary.
And a sick Roland Martin. We thank you very much. Greatly appreciate it, guys.
Thank you.